Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways, and for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
Barnaby Kent is a British expat that has been living in China for the last 12 years, if I did the math right. Went there to study in his lifetime interest of Buddhism and meditation, and is currently a medical student at the Shanghai University of Traditional Chinese Medicine. His first book collaboration is due out later this year, entitled Formulas of Traditional Chinese Medicine. And he is a student in Yang style Tai Chi, as well as a host of different Qigong and martial arts, and has been studying under, or has been a disciple of a fifth generation lineage holder in Yang style Tai Chi. And we are very happy to have him here to teach us about qi, chi, Chinese, not Japanese. Sorry, Barnaby, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you very much, Tom. Well, hello, lovely people. It's an absolute joy to be here. And I'm aware that my webcam is down here, but I have a sense of you being sort of up here where my screen is. So I'm actually going to be talking to you here at my screen. So qi. Qi is in many ways, I think, almost inherently embodied. But I think our understanding of it has become quite disembodied in many ways. It's become a fantasy-based thing. And today my talk is going to be pretty intellectual or academic, because I want to draw us away from fantasy. And I think the first step that we can use to do that is with our intellect. So I'm gonna try and make it as accessible as possible, but the very nature of this subject is such that I feel that we could all benefit from this deeper intellectual understanding that I mentioned. So I think this phenomenon can be extremely confusing. And I think confusion tends to lead to a sort of dislocation from reality and a dislocation from ourselves. And that's really the opposite of embodiment. So we hear the word qi all the time if we're practitioners of Tai Chi or Qigong, or we do Reiki or something like that. And we might often use the word. So today I'm going to invite the conceptual engine of your being to sort of lead the way. So, so let's dive straight in. As Tom mentioned, I've spent a lot of my adult life living in China. And every day, like hundreds of millions of other Chinese speakers, I use the character or the letter or the word qi to talk about very mundane things like cooking or the weather, changing a car tire or something like that. Then when I switch back to English and I insert the word into an English sentence, it comes out sounding rather esoteric, something sort of quite mystical or something you could even say, I don't believe in that. Which, to anyone who speaks Chinese proficiently, is utterly ridiculous, actually, and it makes no sense at all. To say that you don't believe in qi is like saying you don't believe in car tires, or you don't believe in cooking, or you don't believe in the weather. It's quite bizarre. So I think the term for English speakers has become an easy sort of catch-all box where you can throw the products of your wildest imagination, or maybe your ignorance, or whatever you want into it. And that has lots of problems. It doesn't really help us understand the world. It doesn't help us understand ourselves. And it tends to lend itself to yet more problems rather than to real life solutions. So what I want to guide you through today, a solution to understanding this term, or this character, this letter. I'm going to be talking a bit about the Chinese language, about linguistic philosophy, the concept of qi in Chinese medicine, in Tai Chi, and in Qigong. And there's an absolutely enormous amount of things to say here. So this lecture is going to be a little bit of a tour de force. I'm going to be talking quite quickly, and there might be quite a lot of things that will be very unfamiliar to you. So I'm going to rattle through insanely complex topics very quickly, and we might not have time for Q&A, but please do contact me directly if you have any questions about any of this, because after all, I'm a real person. I'm more than happy to discuss anything in this lecture afterwards. So let's start. Let's have a look at the history. I think that's quite a good place to start, because if we understand where we've come from, then we can easily orient ourselves in the present moment. So the word qi has been around for a very long time. It's been in the English language since more or less the early 19th century. And it was written as K apostrophe I in church Romanization. Then in the mid 19th century, it was written as CH apostrophe I in the Wade Giles system of Chinese transliteration, which is basically a way to render Chinese characters into English letters. And so it thus quickly became CHI in common use in English. However, the People's Republic of China adopted the pinyin system of transliteration in the mid 20th century, in which the word qi is written QI. And that's how it's spelt in Chinese. And that's how 1.4 billion people who write it when they're using English letters write the word. And that's how it's used in the academic world. So that's how I think we should all be spelling it, QI. It can be quite confusing because CHI in Chinese, shi, actually means something different. It could mean to eat, or it could mean a whole host of other things. So QI. Now, despite the length of time that this word has existed in the English language, there's widespread misuse and misunderstanding of the term. And this has led to the idea that qi is a sort of separate phenomenon within the world, as it's defined by the English language. It can be sort of neatly inserted into the English language and sit there alongside other words like pen or book, or maybe ghost or God or aliens, and believed in or not. Now, this haphazard insertion of the word qi into the English language has led to it being treated as something like psychic energy or magical power. rather than merely one way of looking at and expressing nature's endless variety. And I'll come back to that term because I love it. Nature's endless variety, i.e. a different division of the very same world that we all inhabit, whether we like it or not. The very same reality that modern science has attempted to define and is working in. This world, not some other spiritual world. So if we go back in history, the earliest known use in China of the word qi has been found on oracle bones, which are sort of bones used for divination. And they date back to the Shang dynasty, which was about 1.5 to about 1,000 years BCE. So it's a very, very old word, and there's a long history of use. And this history goes back to the Bronze Age, and it's been a cornerstone of almost all branches of Chinese culture since then, from philosophy, medicine, martial arts, to geomancy or feng shui. So to appreciate the meaning of this word, I think we first need to recognize that it's a loan word from Chinese with thousands of years of use. It's not really an English word. The character qi is so widely used in Chinese as part of other words that it's impossible to disentangle it from its original linguistic context. So for example, we have words like tian qi or sky qi, which means weather, hong qi or empty qi, which means air, feng qi or wind qi, which means atmosphere or general mood, like the atmosphere in a restaurant. Qi zi or qi nature, which means temperament. Shen qi or spirit qi, which means lofty or impressive. He qi or peaceful, gentle qi, which means friendly. Bian qi, which means electricity or electric qi. And qi qi, or qi substance, which means gas. And thus the list goes on and on and on. So from this perspective, we can see that the word or the character, the letter qi, is not necessarily indicative of another separate phenomenon in the universe that scientists just can't find, but rather it's illustrative of a way of expressing a number of different connected processes that occur naturally. And as we'll look at deeper later, there are many different types of qi. And looking at the different types of qi forces the sort of Western mind through an existential process of redefining the world along the lines of a very different vernacular, a very different language. So some of you might know Wittgenstein. Since the ideas of Wittgenstein have entered popular culture, we can see that language doesn't necessarily describe reality in and of itself, like a mirror would like dispassionately, reflect an object. But rather, language defines or it creates an impression of reality that actually reflects the language used to refer to it. So an easy example that some of you might be familiar here is the indigenous people of the Arctic having so many different words for white because their world is, or it used to be, sadly, covered in snow all year round. So there's a functional reason why they have so many words for white. And I really like what the American linguist Benjamin Lee Whorf has to say about this. So I'm going to read you a short passage from Language, Thought, and Reality, selected readings by Benjamin Lee Whorf. So we cut up and organize the spread and flow of events as we do, largely because through our mother tongue, we are parties to an agreement to do so. Not because nature itself is segmented in exactly that way for all to see. Languages differ not only in how they build sentences, but also in how they break down nature to secure elements to put in those sentences. So this breakdown gives units of the lexicon or vocabulary. He then goes on to say, by these more or less distinct terms, we ascribe a semi-fictitious isolation to parts of experience. English terms like sky, hill, swamp persuade us to regard some elusive aspect of nature's endless variety as a distinct thing, almost like a table or a chair. Thus, English and similar tongues lead us to think of the universe as a collection of rather distinct objects and events corresponding to words. So for the non-Chinese speaker, like perhaps many of us here, looking at the world defined by her or his language for this thing called qi forces us into this paradigm of belief versus non-belief. And I want to propose an alternative, that being an invitation for us to step out of the linguistically defined boundaries of reality that have been prescribed to us since we were children. Because to say that the divisions of nature's endless variety that a mind accustomed to Chinese language has brought into existence, to say that these divisions, these Chinese divisions, can be kind of neatly fitted into the divisions brought into the existence through the use of English is quite absurd. And it's quite difficult. So each language divides the world along different lines. And therefore, if, as non-Chinese speakers, we are to understand the varieties of qi, we must be at least willing to temporarily suspend our own linguistic model of reality. That's difficult, but it avoids the absurdity of trying to reconcile both models. This is therefore an invitation to listen to a story, a foreign story, but a universal story. And in this story, I invite you to find your own story. So, the story begins with the character itself. I'll spare you a really sort of detailed analysis, but very briefly, there are roughly four different ideographs or characters that mean qi. So in traditional Chinese, the character is comprised of two parts. We've got a part which means cloudy vapors or air, along with another part, mi, which means rice, but it has this sort of semantic function of indicating steam or vapor. So to this extent, we can see that qi has the nature of air, steam, or vapor. Now in Chinese medical theory, the qi of the body can be subdivided into prenatal, or before you're born, and postnatal, or after you're born, qi. So postnatal qi, the qi after you're born, is derived from a combination of the air we breathe and the food and water that we eat and drink. So breaking down the character qi into air and rice illustrates this appreciation of postnatal qi. In addition to this, we can see the yin-yang nature of qi in general as both material yin on the one hand and functional yang on the other. So rice, material, and air, sort of functional or non-material. So another one of the four characters that mean qi is comprised of a part or a radical meaning fire underneath a version of the ideograph wu, which means not to have or a lack of or simply nothingness. So according to traditional Chinese cosmology, the universe originated from a state free from extremes called wu ji. And this is the state that we start in Tai Chi. When we're practicing Tai Chi, we start in a state of wu ji, a state of nothingness. So back to cosmology, this state of wu ji is described as hun dun qi or chaos qi. So despite being chaotic nothingness, this state of chaos qi was alive or impregnated with something called source qi or yuan qi. From this state originated a polarity, yin yang, and therefore a potentiality, the extremes of yang and yin, a positive and a negative charge, creating the potential for all transformations out of source qi. So metaphorically, we can think of the qi of the universe as like a fire stirring nothingness into action. Gaseous clouds condensed to form planets and suns, and the qi of the heavens, like meteorological forces, and the earth, geological forces. So in this environment, these natural meteorological and geological forces between the heavens and the earth evolved Wo mankind to exist on the earth under the sky. Thus, human qi exists between heaven qi and earth qi. So we have this quote from the Plain Questions, the Su Wen, which is a classic in Chinese medicine, written a few hundred years BC. In the Su Wen, they say, when the qi of heaven and earth combine, it forms human life. So looking in this way at qi in a general sense, everything in the universe consists of qi. Qi in the general sense is thus, I think, synonymous with the word energy. So if you're looking for another word to use instead of qi because you don't speak Chinese, why not use energy? I think it's a pretty good translation. Everything in the universe is comprised of energy. Matter is condensed energy, qi. This idea is called qi monism. And from this perspective, we can see how all things are interrelated in a dynamic interplay of transformation from one state of energy to another. When a large amount of qi is condensed into a small part of space-time, material substances of the periodic table are observed. And when qi is dispersed or released from elements that comprise the periodic table, it is sped up and it's observed as light or heat. So qi is therefore substantial and insubstantial. And according to Chinese medical theory, there are a number of different ways to differentiate the qi of the human body. So as mentioned above, one way to differentiate the qi of the human body is into prenatal and postnatal qi. Prenatal qi comes from the energy present in the sperm and the ovum of a human's mother and father. So sperm can be seen as pertaining to yang qi. And the ovum can be seen as pertaining to yin qi. So together they form the qi necessary for the growth and the development of a human being. So that's prenatal qi. Postnatal qi, on the other hand, is derived from the nutrients extracted from grain qi, or bu qi, which is the nutrition from the food that we eat and the water that we drink in our lifetime, called nutrient qi or ying qi. And oxygen, also another type of qi called yang qi. So from all of this, we get clear qi or qing qi. So that's the air that we breathe. So together, the nutrient qi, the clear qi, they combine through the action of the digestive system in conjunction with the heart and the respiratory system to form pectoral qi or zhong qi, which is sometimes called ancestral qi, which is quite confusing because some people think ancestral qi is the qi that we get from our ancestors, but that's actually not true. Ancestral qi is zhong qi, it's pectoral qi, or the qi of the chest. We'll have a little look at that a bit more later, but pectoral qi is then distributed throughout the body to provide nourishment. So let's review a little bit. So far we have yang qi in sperm, we've got yin qi in the ovum, we've got grain or cereal qi in food, we've got nutrient qi, which is the nutrition in our body that we get from food. We have clear qi in the air that we breathe, which is rich in yang qi or oxygen. And together, nutrient qi and clear qi make the qi of the chest or pectoral qi, which spreads throughout the body. So in this way that we can see that the qi of the human body is inherited from our parents, i.e. it's prenatal. And some of it also comes from the food and the drink and the air that we consume in our lives. But that's postnatal. So that's a very simple introduction to the different types of qi, but it gets much more complex. In Chinese medicine, we can roughly divide qi into 7 or 8 different general categories. So we've already mentioned a few. So let's dive in and have a look at some of the other types. So perhaps the most fundamental qi that we have in our bodies is called original qi, yuan qi. Original qi is derived from the prenatal essence that we obtain from the ovum and the sperm that we get from the mother and father. This is prenatal qi. So original qi originates from a place called the gate of life, or the mingmen, which is a point debated to reside either between the kidneys or in the kidneys itself. But generally, I think that we can think of this as the endocrine system. So the system that communicates hormonally throughout our body. So in that sense, original qi is produced from prenatal essence, from our endocrine system. So since prenatal essence in Chinese medicine is finite, it's a finite resource of the body, this type of qi, original qi, is also considered to be finite, and it's used up throughout our lives in the process of living. So original qi leaves the gate of life and it carries original essential information for physiological processes through the vessels to the viscera, the organs of our body, as well as through the thoracic, the abdominal and the pelvic cavities, and the interstices, or the spaces between the organs, to the intercellular matrix to enable the essential functions of cell production and metabolism to take place. So I think a possible analogy here between original qi and stem cells can be made, in the sense that stem cells are our body's raw material and are the cells from which other specialized cells are generated. So analogous to the action of original qi, analogous to the action of original qi, stem cells exist in a kind of like an undifferentiated state before mitosis, whereby they transform into and they build all the various different cells of the body. So that's original qi, sometimes called source qi. Now, another two forms of prenatal qi are initiating qi and genuine qi. So both initiating qi and genuine qi are both forms of prenatal qi, in the sense that they both come from this prenatal essence that we get from our mother and father. And the character, the ideograph for initiating qi, yuan, can be translated as beginning or starting, original or initiating. And this type of qi is described as being like the initiating spark or influence that kind of kickstarts the process of life. Much like we had this original qi, source qi in the cosmos, mixed with chaos qi that gave rise to the cosmos. So we mentioned initiating qi. Now, genuine qi, on the other hand, is another type of qi. And it's another word for the qi that is meant to travel in the channels or the meridians in the body. So this type of qi flows in these channels as described in Chinese medicine. So if you've ever had an acupuncture treatment, then you're probably well aware that in Chinese medicine, there are channels of qi in the body. And in these channels, the type of qi that flows in these channels is called genuine qi or zhen qi. So other types of qi don't necessarily flow in those meridians or channels, but genuine qi does. Genuine qi directs postnatal nutrient qi in the maintenance of normal physiological functions. So genuine qi, from what I can gather, sounds kind of bioelectrical in nature rather than gaseous. But it's important to consider that this type of qi, genuine qi, travels through different anatomical structures in the body, some of which are more or less electrically conductive. So whilst it acts somewhat like electricity, it's perhaps slightly different. And in a state of good health is the result of the initiating qi, providing the initial sort of stimulating influence life to begin, and then genuine qi informing cells how to operate correctly. Whereas source qi, or what we said original qi, initiating qi, and genuine qi are all derived from prenatal essence, pectoral qi is derived from two sources. The first being postnatal essence extracted from grain qi that we eat, food that we eat, by the digestive system, and then it becomes nutrient qi. And the other source of pectoral qi is clear qi, or the air that we breathe. So the word depicting pectoral in pectoral qi means root, or ancestor, or source, or gathering. And it's translated as pectoral as it gathers in the chest and it's distributed to the respiratory tract and the vessels through the action of the heart. So pectoral qi is responsible for maintaining respiration and for vocalization, as well as assisting blood circulation and supplementing this initiating qi. Okay, so let's keep going. We've got a couple more. Defensive qi is another type of qi, and it encompasses a range of quite complex physiological processes, which you can think of as being the immune system. So defensive qi has a prenatal as well as a postnatal source. And unlike genuine qi, which travels in the meridians, defensive qi travels outside of the meridians. And it travels through the interstices, or the spaces between the organs. And it travels to the surface of the organs and to the skin to protect against external pathogens. So our skin is covered in this defensive qi. But defense qi, it doesn't flow in the meridians. And that's an important distinction. Defense qi is said to warm the body, as well as regulating sweat to maintain normal body temperature. Now, the last sort of division in Chinese medicine that we have is visceral qi, or organ qi. And that's the collective name for the qi that stimulates and maintains the physiology of our organs. So heart qi is responsible for the correct functioning of the heart. Liver qi is responsible for the correct functioning of the liver. And of course, in modern physiology, the autonomic nervous system stimulates organs and regulates their function. So visceral qi can be seen as, maybe can be seen as, action potentials that travel along nerves and innervate organs, preventing hypo or hyperfunctioning. They keep organs in the balance. Now, all of that is quite academic, but I'm an acupuncturist, and in the clinic, people often use the word qi to talk about different sensations in the body. And this is, I think, another really legitimate use of the word that gives voice to subjective feelings that we all have. And the different types of qi not only describe the relative functions of the organs and the physiology of the body, like we've just talked about, but they also help us to understand subtle feelings for which there might not even exist a word in the English language. So when beginning to study Chinese medicine on an acupuncturist's ward of a busy hospital in China, with needles puncturing my skin and puncturing other people's skin, and I observed a range of distinctly different sensations traversing my body, and how they accumulated around the insertion points of the needles. So some of these sensations were tingly and hot. Others were tingly and cold. Some were tingly and numbing. Others tingly with increased sensation. Some sensations were calming, others were disturbing. So the English vocabulary kind of falls short of sufficiency, really, describing all of these sensations within the body. Yet it is these sensations that comprise our every mood and our feelings. So Chinese medicine has a systematic functional lexicon of words to describe the myriad of different subtle sensations embodied in the human. So for example, like the burning sensation of inflammation, I've got a bit of cauliflower ear up here, it burns, and I can describe that as fire qi. Or the clammy feeling of sweating, got a little bit of that right now too, I could describe that as damp qi. The subjective feeling of an inhibited central nervous system, a reduced sympathetic fight or flight nerve excitability, an inhibited endocrine system, and a reduced basal metabolic rate. All of that can be described as cold qi. So you might hear these words, cold or hot, as properties of food in Chinese medicine or of herbal medicine. It has a cold property or hot property. And really, that's actually just another way of talking about the central nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, the endocrine system, metabolic rate, and all of the other things that are quite familiar to anybody who's studied a bit of science. So these are the experiences of humans like you or I. We're not talking about something necessarily gaseous or electrical here. We're not talking about psychic energy. We're just talking about the basic, bog-standard subjective sensations that we experience every day. Like the word anger in Chinese, sheng qi, which translated directly means to give birth to qi. So anger is another type of qi. The emotional universe is the world of qi. Now, this is the Martial and Healing Channel. So many of you are probably quite interested in some way or another in martial arts. And another major field in which non-Chinese speakers might come across the word qi is in the fields of qigong or the internal martial arts, of which taijiquan or tai chi is a branch. So qigong means the practice of qi. And it's important to mention here, I think, that the tai chi is the English term for taijiquan. So the qi in tai chi is actually ji in Chinese, and it has nothing to do with qi that we're talking about here. Ji in taiji means extreme or polar. Like we say, the north ji means the north pole, or the south ji is the south pole. So let's take a little look from a modern scientific perspective at the function of qi for the practitioner of qigong. And when I say qigong here, I'm really referring to systems like the muscle tendon changing classic, the Yi Jin Jing, or maybe the eight brocades, the Ba Duan Jin. So there are lots of systems of qigong, and they're very common throughout the world, as well as internal martial arts like Tai Chi or Xing Yi or Ba Gua Zhang. So in qigong and internal martial arts, there are three main energy centers in the body called dantian. There's the upper dantian, there's the middle dantian, and I'll stand up so you can see, and then the lower dantian down here. So these are places in the body where the qi converges and can be stored. So there's, I think, a little bit of a difference here between dantian and chakra. From my very, very limited understanding of a chakra, it's something like an intersection or of converging energy channels, whereas a dantian is not an intersection of channels so much as an area where qi can be stored, like a battery. So the lower dantian is an area roughly 2 to 3 centimeters below your umbilicus, and it's deep to the rectus abdominis and the linea alba, which is the sheet of connective tissue in the middle of your six pack. And the lower dantian is of, channels are nadis, not chakras. Okay, someone said something. No, I meant dantian is not a chakra. So anyway, let's keep going, right? So. The lower dantian is important for qigong practitioners because it's where one first cultivates qi, where one first stores qi and refines it there and then learns to release it. So This is the language of the practice of Qigong. Now, if you're involved in Tai Chi or Qigong or Taoist alchemy or other internal Chinese self-cultivation practices, then you probably hear a lot about sinking your qi to your lower dantian, qi chen dantian. But what does this actually mean? Unfortunately and confusingly, it means two, or possibly more than two, very different things. One structural and one bioelectrical. But the language used for both is unfortunately exactly the same. Sink your qi to your lower dantian. So it's very confusing, and perhaps the two different meanings reflect two different meanings of qi, one as a gas and one as bioelectricity. So I'm running out of time, I'll go quite quickly. So through practicing qigong or internal martial arts over time, one's abdominal area changes in consistency and the deep abdominal wall becomes thicker and more elastic, and it swells up with pressure that's accumulated there in the process of structural alignment and deep abdominal breathing. So for many practitioners of internal martial arts, this phenomenon is what's described in the Tai Chi classics as qi sinking and being stored in the lower dantian. So the lower dantian expands to fill the entire hypogastric region and the left and the right iliac regions and even part of the umbilical region above the umbilicus. So it becomes a very big ball of thick and elastic connective tissue. And the physical pressure that builds up in these regions from practicing internal martial arts, it stretches the thoracolumbar fascia at your lower back. So we've got this big sheet of connective tissue called the thoracolumbar aponeurosis or fascia on your lower back, which when stretched, it redirects force away from your spine. So the thoracolumbar fascia should be the main weight-bearing structure in your trunk that functionally connects the upper and the lower body and protects your spine from injury. So for example, in Pilates, something else I know very, very little about, I think you learn to activate your thoracolumbar fascia by pulling it taut, by tensing your transversus abdominis, right? Your deep abdominal muscle. In Qigong and internal martial arts, you activate your thoracolumbar fascia through posterior pelvic rotation, rotating your pelvis backwards or tucking your bum, and deep abdominal breathing. And the thoracolumbar fascia is stretched. So in doing this, it activates a biomechanical mechanism called the thoracolumbar fascia mechanism. And the thoracolumbar fascia, like I said, it should be the main weight-bearing aspect of your trunk. So activation of this mechanism functionally connects the upper and the lower parts of your body. So with a very strong and elastic thoracolumbar fascia connecting the body, the person can really efficiently transfer kinetic energy from the ground to the rest of the body and from the rest of the body to the ground. So it is this like sinking of the qi, i.e. breath, to the lower dantian that biomechanically allows for a really increased stability through the frame of the entire body, as well as an enormous increase in the amount of kinetic energy that you can generate in the process of physical movement whilst standing, be it like pushing or pulling, or punching or kicking. So through activation of the thoracolumbar fascia mechanism, as well as other mechanisms in Tai Chi, the body can act as one connected whole. And then when you breathe deeply, you can feel this one connected whole moving. So you can feel the breath throughout your whole body because it's connected through these biomechanical mechanisms. So that feels like the chi is going through your whole body. But it might be more the sensation of pulsating fascia. So I think almost all, I'd say like 99.999% of Qigong and internal martial arts that I've come across in 12 years of research, actively looking for Qigong and internal martial arts practices in China as a full-time occupation, works the lower Dantian in this structural way. And the commonality of all of these practices, these structural Qigong and internal martial arts practices, seem to be the alignment of joints and the relaxation of muscles, which enables the practitioner to open their joints and isolate the deep fascia and work it out so that it becomes much stronger and more elastic. So if you're practicing Tai Chi or Qigong and you don't develop the ability to release a strong direct electrical current from your body that's strong enough to burn a piece of paper with your hands, then that's what you're doing. You're opening your joints with relaxed muscles, which isolate chains of deep fascia and puts a unique tension on them so that they thicken and they become more elastic. So opening the joints of the body enables greater perfusion or blood flow to your extremities. And thus Tai Chi or Qigong practitioners will often feel like a warm tingling feeling in their hands and feet. And they'll call that Qi. Now, that's the feeling of oxygen, which is a type of Qi, right? Yang Qi in Chinese, flowing with your blood to your extremities. Is that really working with qi? Well, of course it is. It's working with breath. It's working with oxygen. It improves mood, which is also a type of qi. And it improves the movement of different types of qi that we mentioned earlier throughout the body. So this type of qigong I call structural qigong, because it's working qi by working the structure of. However, and this is where it gets really juicy, hidden, really deeply, deeply hidden in China and Indonesia and various other little pockets of the world, there's another much, much more impressive form of Qigong that represents not just structural change in the body, but rather storage, refinement, and use of something like bioelectricity in the Dantians of the body. And this bioelectrical Qigong is almost exclusively used by medical professionals. What I have personally felt from multiple practitioners of this bioelectrical Qigong is an incredibly strong direct electrical current being released from a practitioner's hand. This electrical current feels stronger than the mains electricity in the UK where I'm from. It's not like an electric fence, like, ooh, or a static shock. It's nothing like that, but rather an incredibly strong and painful current that causes your muscles to contract by themselves. So if you're holding somebody's hand when you do it, the muscles of your hand sort of do this, they can't help but contracting. And it's an extraordinary thing. It's the most extraordinary thing I've ever come across in my life. Now, when I'm saying this, you know, what I have personally witnessed, it sounds incredible. I mean, what I personally witnessed is the use of this technology to treat a very wide range of diseases, from musculoskeletal things to cancer. And the current produced can create heat, and it can displace objects at a distance. And you're probably thinking, oh yeah, this sounds like BS. And even as I say this, I mean, I'm aware that it sounds almost too incredible to be true. And for years, until actually recently, until I actually met practitioners of this bioelectrical Qigong, I was absolutely convinced it was fake. And all of my other teachers told me it was fake. So you're probably thinking, why haven't we seen this technology on TV? You know, why isn't it out there? Well, that's an incredibly complex question. It's heavily tied up in politics, economics, and the conception of medicine that forms the status quo of our civilization. But a few people have opened it up to the world. So if you're interested, you can search for Dynamo Jack, search for Jiang Feng. You'll find videos online. Unfortunately, the exposure of this technology to the world ruined the lives of many people involved. And currently, the doctors that I know who use this technology, they treat patients, they charge tens or even hundreds of thousands of US dollars for treatments. So in the future, it's my deep wish and intention to take groups of patients to meet these teachers and to make it easier to access this technology. However, at the moment, it is possible to take people there, but it remains astronomically expensive. So I've got 2 minutes. Let me conclude. So, okay, we've seen that we divide the world along the lines of language. And the concept of qi has come about because of a linguistic division of the world inherent to the Chinese language. The word qi is inextricably intertwined with the Chinese language. And as we've seen, it can mean many different things when it forms part of different words. It's therefore a really nebulous concept rather than a specific phenomenon. We've seen that in Chinese cosmology, chaos qi, impregnated with source qi, gives rise to the qi of the heavens and the earth, and in between which there is human qi. And we've seen that in Chinese medicine, human qi is of a myriad of forms. It has many different specific qualities to the systems of the body that enable physiological processes to run. We've seen that the word qi can be shorthand for sensation or emotion, and there are many different specific types of qi that describe sensations. And finally, we've seen that there's a very big difference between the meaning of qi and structural qigong and internal martial arts like tai chi compared with bioelectrical qigong. And I shall end it there. Well, I hope this has inspired you a little bit, and maybe you can do your own research. Please feel free to contact me if you've got any questions. Over to you, Tom.
Thank you, Barnaby. I can't believe that we would ever possibly get something wrong like tai chi. Of course we know what that means. We know more than the Chinese. Thank you for that. That was actually really informative. I do Japanese martial arts, and it actually kind of explains some of the stuff that we do. So right. If you all want to learn more about Barnaby, you can check him out on Instagram. And I'm supposed to do a big long spiel, but I am about ready to go to bed, so I don't care about that right now. The bosses can,
I'm a bit of a technophobe anyway, so I'm only really on Instagram, but you can contact me there.
Yep. So if you would like to get this and all the other presentations that are going on right now, there is a link in the chat to upgrade the service. And here in just a moment, I will send everyone out to do the coffee room breakout rooms. Link there in the chat. No, it is not. That went to panelists. It's 1 o'clock in the morning here. There we go. And let me get that Instagram. Woo. There we go. Okay, there we go. So, wrapping up, I have one last question for you. What is your number one top tip for staying embodied?
Easy. Relax and concentrate.
Great. Thank you all for being here. I am going to go to bed now. I hope you all will stay around for the next session in an hour with Matt Hill. You'll be talking about the body, fear, and breath. And until then, hope you all have a very good day or night, wherever you are.